Just coming up to 10 minutes to 8 on Thursday night's Arena. Deep in the woods of Maine, there's a dark state facility where children abducted from across the United States are incarcerated in the Institute. They are subjected to a series of tests and procedures meant to combine their exceptional gifts, telepathy, telekinesis, for concentrated effect. Sound like a reworking of X-Men? Well, no. It's actually the premise for Stephen King's latest novel, The Institute. Declan Burke has been reading it for us. He's with me in studio now. We're so used to Stephen King bringing us into kind of supernatural worlds or something that seems real but has this supernatural undercurrent. What kind of worlds are you bringing us into here, Declan?
Very, very similar, Sean. As always, very realistic scenario. Would recognise it. You know, it's recognisably Maine, contemporary Maine. But the characters have that supernatural quality. This goes all the way back, right back to a start, to Carrie, to It, to, you know, all. We define Stephen King by his relationship to the supernatural. Sometimes the supernatural forces are malign or negative. We get vampires, for example. But as often as not, the supernatural quality and the characters are positive, and certainly Stephen King tends to draw these characters sympathetically, and the younger they are, he tends to be more sympathetic towards the characters.
In some ways, the stories often revolve around how they handle and accept or reject the particular quality or power or supernatural aspect that may be within their lives.
Absolutely. I mean, Carrie was the classic example. Carrie, you know, is obliged to suppress and hide this supernatural power that she has until such time as, you know, it's a metaphor for bullying and so forth, but she eventually explodes in this vengeful rage everybody knows the story of Carrie, but that is a very frequent narrative arc that Stephen King employs, certainly.
So the child, well, one, there are several children involved here, but I guess basically Luke is the main person we're following here, the main young child. What's his particular power? What's he trying to deal with?
Luke Ellis, well, he's first introduced to us as a child prodigy. He's incredibly intelligent. He's 12 years old, raised in the Midwest, and he's already planning his next semester. He's going not just to one college, but he's going to two. He's going to study engineering at MIT, and he's going to major in English at Emerson. So super intelligent, and his telekinetic ability is almost, you know, an afterthought in terms of who the character
telekinesis
is.
Telekinesis is the ability to look at this little bottle top in front of the table.
Indeed, and
but he can move it,
the power
not with his finger like I did.
But he has a very weak power. You know, if he's very, very mad, he might be able to cause a pizza plate to fall off the table. This is not, you know, serious supernatural powers, and he has always done his best to keep it quiet. And then one night, very quickly after he's introduced in the novel, there is a kind of a terrorist operation where the house is infiltrated, his parents are shot dead, and Luke is spirited away in the middle of the night from the Midwest near St. Louis and across the country, as you said, to Maine, to the deep woods in Maine.
And this place, which is called The Institute, which gives us the title of the book. What kind of place are we talking about? The Institute doesn't sound like a place you want to be if you're a child.
No, it's not very... Well, it's once Luke wakes up, he realises he's in his own room, his bedroom at home, and then he spots tiny little differences. In fact, they've gone to all the trouble of making this effectively a cell in the Institute look like his own bedroom. So it's not an unpleasant place physically, except Luke, being a highly intelligent boy, realises there is something very, very off. There are guards. The place is run by a Dr. Sigsby. It's run as an institute, and the kids are, you know, they're well fed and so forth, but they all have to obey orders, they have to do certain, and then the tests begin that you reference. They are subjected to various kind of pressures. They're forced to take certain drugs, all of which are designed to enhance their, if they have a telekinetic power, if they have a telepathic power, all these things. And Stephen King makes it clear very early on, this is kind of the kind of programs the CIA used to run in the 1950s, that, you know, they used to give people LSD and so forth and see how they would behave. Can we create a super soldier and so forth? What Dr. Sigsby, who's running the Institute, is trying to create is what they call psychic drones, which is children with the ability to effectively assassinate a person either in the States or on the other side of the world just by the power of thought.
that's all they need to do.
In effectively, yes, but the children need to group together, so it's kind of like a hive
collective,
mind. And,
right.
And once the collective is suitably strong, then they can direct their thinking. If they're not actually assassinating the person, either,
right.
but they are causing them to behave in a certain way that the person would commit suicide. So looks very...
Yeah. Yeah. So they look like a death by suicide when
absolutely.
In fact they have caused it. So we've Luke here. I'm guessing if we need the collective to bring their powers together in that fashion, we must get to know some others of the children in the Institute as well.
Very quickly, and this is what I really liked about the novel. There were some aspects I didn't like. What I really liked about it, Luke is super intelligent, but he's a normal kid. He's always tried to be a normal kid. And when he comes in to a very difficult situation, you would expect that these kids have been institutionalized in the Institute. But in fact, they are quite a nice bunch of kids. They are generally smarter. They all have various powers and so forth. But they're very sociable. They're very adaptable. They're very sophisticated socially. So they all band together. And at one point, Stephen King, in his introduction, he refers to Tom Brown's Schoolboys and The Lord of the Flies were kind of his inspirations, but it doesn't really work that way, because The Lord of the Flies is all about how quickly society breaks down when there's no structure, and particularly when there's no adult structure.
And I guess there's a lot of structure in the Institute.
There's far too much, and it's all it's run by adults and so forth. But what is most endearing to me about this book is the way that the kids band together, fly under the radar, come up with their own kind of language, come up with their own way of doing things out of sight of cameras and so forth, in order to subvert this Institute and the adults that are trying to suppress
them. Do we
get
to know the adults particularly well? Do we care about them?
I didn't. We were told a little bit about Doctor. To be honest, they felt a bit like, you know, two-dimensional cardboard cutouts. Mm. These are the villains, you know, and they're portrayed as kind of cold, emotionally cold and so forth. They're really only there as characters for, you know, that against which Luke and his friends, and particularly Luke, can rebel and kind of, you know, eventually tear down what the Institute represents.
Yeah, I want to be careful now, but not saying too much about how these things transpire. But we know that there is a section of the Institute that is a crematorium.
Indeed.
And there's only one thing that happens in crematoriums, or crematoria, if that's
well,
the correct.
Well, absolutely. The amount of effort it takes to act as a psychic drone, there tends to be quite a lot of wastage with the kids. Now, the crematorium, to my mind, and to a lot of people's mind, will, you know, evoke images of the concentration camps.
Yeah, and particularly when you talk
camps.
About, you know, experiments carried out on
absolutely.
The children as well.
And I think we're supposed to think that at the
Make
start
that
of the
analogy.
Novel, but very quickly Stephen King makes it explicit. You know, one of the guards in the Institute is referred to as Eichmann, another the doctor is referred to as Mengele, and at one point he says he thought again of the concentration camps and the horrible nonsensical experiments that have been conducted there. So I do think that Stephen King is trying to use the Institute as an analogy for the death camps. I don't think the analogy works. I don't think it's strong enough.
Is it a step too far?
I think he's pushed a little bit too far. Yes, terrible things happen in the Institute, but it's not designed as a means and you know, on an industrial level of how to wipe out an entire race. I don't think the analogy works. I'm not doubting Stephen King's sincerity for a second, but I just don't think he's worked the analogy hard enough to persuade us.
Carrie was the first novel back in 1973, and here we are in 2000 and whatever. Let's say even if we were in 2023, we'd have 50 years. It's 60 novels, 60
yeah.
books, some of them are non-fiction. That's a lot of writing.
It is.
Does it suffer from, you know, should he maybe hold back the odd time?
For the last 10 years, I'm a big fan and have been for years and years, and some of his early novels are some of my favourites. It, for example, was absolutely, yes, I would love if he would just relax, take his time. I think he's a wonderful writer on a page by page. There are very few people as good at telling stories, but there's no doubt that if you are churning out two books a year and sometimes three books a year, you cannot maintain the quality. I think the Institute has suffered as a result of that.
It's like pushing that analogy that you say between the Institute and the concentration camps.
Perhaps in order to give the book more significance than possibly it deserves, because he hasn't spent enough time on it, or I don't know what it is. I can only assume that he has the kind of clout with his publisher that he could say, look, this isn't ready to go yet. I'm going to take another 6 months. And,
yeah,
you know, I'm sure that...
I can't imagine they'd be saying, no, we must have it now. You're getting no money.
I wouldn't have thought so either. I would love to see him put on the brakes, take his time and really start to, you know, start really thinking about his legacy at this point. Mm. As you know, one of the most prolific and you know, he almost developed a whole new genre by himself. He is in danger, I think, of publishing a couple of books too many at
this
point. All right,
and the Institute, you would say... Yes, but there's...
Yes, very readable, particularly in terms of the kids and their relationship. He has always written young characters very well. I think it'll be one only for the completists of the Stephen King. You'll get through it, but it won't be remarkable for you.
He'd send us back earlier if we're not completists, if we haven't come across or haven't read enough Stephen King. You're back to the beginning, Carrie. It's...
Oh, absolutely. Go back to the ASF. It's just brilliant.
But if you are a completist and you want The Institute, that's the book that Declan Burke has been talking to us about, Stephen King's latest. It's published, as all the others are, I think, as well, by Hodder and Stoughton. And that is our lot for this Thursday evening here on Arena. Leah Murphy and Paula Shields researched. Brian Moss was the broadcast coordinator. Sound supervision this evening was by Harry Brookes. And tonight's programme was produced by Olin McGowan. I will speak with you once again tomorrow night, 7 o'clock here on RT Radio 1. But right now, Tosi Jirukanam to John Creedon.